Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Good morning, 609 News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's good to have you with us. Joining us now by phone, we have Dean DeBolt. He is the University Archivist and the head of the West Florida History Center at the University of West Florida Library. Dean, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Yeah, Andrew, great to talk to you today.
Hey, great to have you.
And I hope to correct that. Song, Don't Know Much About History.
Always, exactly right. That's why we would like to have you on. So your article this week in the PNJ, we've been doing this whole series of having the authors of these articles on every week. Scheduling didn't allow us to do it yesterday. That's why I wanted to have it this morning. But yours, this was all about mail delivery and how this worked in Pensacola 200 years ago. So tell us a little bit about what was communication via letter like back then?
Well, it's pretty difficult. Rachel Chaskin wrote one of the first letters she wrote. She complained that there's no mail, no post office here. And the only way you could send mail from Pensacola in those days is you hoped to find somebody who was traveling for you. You'd give them a letter, and they would travel and by horse or maybe by boat or whatever and try to get it mailed to a place where there might be a post office and normal mail delivery. I mean, the United States had a mail delivery system. You just had to try to get the mail to that point, and then it could be picked up by stagecoach or sent up river by boat or something like that.
So
it was quite difficult for a while.
So you were basically in Pensacola. You were trying to hitch a ride on somebody who was either going where you wanted to go with your letter or else they were going to connect to the broader system and then once from there to get it where it needed to go. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Now, Andrew Jackson was quite lucky because being the military guy, he had troops at his disposal, so he could call up somebody and send them off by horseback and said, hey, you know, take this letter to New Orleans or something like that. But you never knew how long it was going to take. I mean, one of his letters he wrote just a few days before the flag ceremony in July. I mean, it took 8 weeks to get from Pensacola to New England. So mail was not quite all that dependable.
Wow.
The other problem with the mail system, once it got established, was that at this time period, it was the recipient that paid the postage for mail.
So that
opened up quite a lot of interesting issues in itself.
Yeah, letters were basically like the old collect calls where you would send it and then you'd hope somebody on the other end was willing to pay to take it.
Yeah, that's right. And you'd hope that they had the money to pay for it. There's one story I didn't put in the article that doesn't pertain to Pensacola, but to give you an example, the hero of the Mexican-American War of 1845 was General Zachary Taylor. And so in 1848, the Whigs got together and they decided to nominate him to run for president of the United States. And they had their convention in New York City, and they put him up and all that. Well, Zachary Taylor wasn't in New York City at that time. He was in Arkansas. And so once they nominated him, they wrote him a letter. They wrote him a lovely letter saying, Mr. Taylor, General Taylor, do you please accept the nomination to run for president? And they waited and they waited and they waited and they didn't hear from him. And finally, they had to send somebody all the way to Arkansas to see him personally. And when they got there, they discovered that since he was the great hero, there were dozens, if not hundreds, of letters sitting in the post office written by people everywhere to the great Zachary Taylor. And he wasn't about to go to the post office and spend $30 or $40 a day just to pay the postage to get these letters. So it was sitting there in the dead, or Abomination was sitting there in the dead letter office because he hadn't paid the postage to get it. So that was one of the problems with paying for mail.
Why was that system in place? Do you know why it was the recipient and not the sender who paid the postage?
Well, yeah, I mean, the system was expected to pay for itself. I mean, the stamps and all that is essentially a tax. It's essentially a tax that you pay to the government to operate the system. So the idea was the person paying where the male had to do the system. It also saved the postmasters in rural areas from having to manage money, if you will, and a great deal of things. One of the things about it is you wrote your letter, you folded it up, you sealed it with a wax seal to keep the pieces of paper together, and you sent it off. And sometimes when you came into the post office, which could be a shelf on a store in town,
right?
The postmaster would say, "Hey, I got a letter sitting here for you," and they'd let you look at it. And you might look it over. There might be something on it that was from your sister in Boston or something like that. But there, some thrifty people realized that they could take a letter like that and they could put a little ink mark in a corner of the envelope. And so you'd take the letter, you'd look, and the ink mark was in the left corner, and that meant everything was fine at home. And you'd tell the postmaster, "Oh, I just don't have the money to pay for that today. You'll just have to hold on to it, you know." And then another time you'd go in and there'd be an ink mark maybe in the right-hand another corner, and that meant you better open this mail. And he'd say, "Yeah, I think I'll pay the postage for this one today." And you'd pay the post after money for it. The other thing was that since the post office had no delivery, I mean, you couldn't live in Pensacola and expect a mail carrier to come around. You had to go by wherever the post office was and see if there was mail. That's why so many people who ran newspapers, and that's what happened in Pensacola, the first postmaster was the guy who was also running the newspaper. That meant his office, where you came in, became a focal point of news. So if somebody would come in from northern Escambia County, a trader or something, to pick up his mail, you get to talk to him, and now you had a story or something to put in the paper. So it was quite handy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Handy to do that.
Huh,
and even in the 20th century, they always talked about the local post office being the focal point of the community. Everybody would come by and pick up their mail and get some post, and they'd start talking and that kind of thing.
That's fascinating because, you know, it's certainly not the way the post office functions for our society today. It's so much more minimalist transactional. It's not a gathering place at all, but it's interesting to think about that making sense as being that kind of a place in the past. Well, Dean, as always, great information. So fascinating. And, you know, thanks for giving us a snapshot look back into the past. Dean DeBolt, he is the university archivist and the head of the West Florida History Center at the University of West Florida Library. We're looking forward to the 200th anniversary coming up in a couple of months. Dean, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for teaching us.
You're welcome. Have a great day, Andrew.
Absolutely. 616 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis, this may predate you a little bit.
Okay.
But I remember there was an ad back in the day, and I don't even remember what it was for, but I remember the premise of the ad was the dad with his wife who's pregnant delivering the child in the hospital calls the grandparents. And it's a collect call from, "We had a baby, it's a boy." and the dad says, "Yeah, I don't need the charges." Because the message was in the name that he recorded for the thing. So that's like the old mail. You know, put a little mark on the envelope and communicate it. Then nobody has to pay for the mail delivery.
And then the dad or the grandma was like, "Who is that?" He's like, "Oh, I forget the son's
name."
Yeah,
yeah,
like, yeah. "They had a baby. It's a boy."
Right. Exactly.
Increases fines that may be levied for deplatforming candidate to $250,000 per day from $100,000 per day for statewide candidates, and $25,000 per day from $10,000 per day for all other candidates. Reduces the number of days that a user has to be banned by a social media platform for it to qualify as deplatforming from 60 days to 14 days. Reduces the number of the days that a social media company has to notify a user after censoring, shadow banning, or deplatforming action from 30 days to 7 days.
This is a bill that the House has now been debating. The Florida House debated 2 days in a row, and yesterday they voted on it and passed it. Now it's got to go back to the Senate because their versions don't exactly match. This is how stuff works at the end of session. But that's Representative Blazing Golia talking about the social media regulation bill, the one that is basically an effort to require social media companies to be clear about what will get you banned and or deplatformed deplatformed, and then to be clear that they have to tell you, and also to raise the penalties for when they deplatform, for example, candidates for statewide or not statewide office here in Florida. It's fascinating to me that, for example, Anna Eskamani, who is one of the loudest voices on the Democrat side, her answer is, you don't really have to be on social media, you know?
What I contest, though, is this thought that tech companies are like utility companies and thus they should be regulated. The reality is that you don't need to be on Facebook. You don't need to be on Twitter.
Wow. Well, you don't need to be able to buy radio ads. I mean, you don't need to be able to buy TV ads. You know, you can still win elections without that stuff. But there's an awful lot of regulation of how that stuff works to make sure that everybody has a fair opportunity. So there's one category of concern, which is during elections. There's another category of concern, which is, of course, dealing with the ordinary person talking about your views online. And it's a weird space. Social media is, you know, we don't have good laws. We don't even have good ethics surrounding, in terms of a well-worked out framework surrounding it, because it's such a new technology. The law is completely inadequate for where we are with social media right now. And that's what this is an effort to figure out is, well, what is it? Is it more like a public space? Is it more like a newsprint newspaper? Is it more like a radio or a TV station? You know, what is it exactly? Because they are private companies, but they have, and of course, with a lot of immunity from the federal government, they have taken over the public discussion space to the point where they function more like a utility and more like a public space than they do like a private company. So it's a very complex topic. Very, very complex. We'll probably talk more about this tomorrow. 623 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
A 13-hour standoff in North Carolina we told you about last hour is over, leaving one deputy dead, another wounded. Deputies carrying out a wellness check on Wednesday when the homeowner didn't show up for work. The two deputies shot by an person in the house when they arrived. Authorities say the suspect also appears to have killed himself. Gas could be on short supply this summer. Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy talking about the implications.
Think Orlando, Florida with Walt Disney World, Yosemite, Yellowstone. Some of these areas don't have enough gas stations or truckers to be able to meet what could be a very high summer for gasoline consumption.
Reports earlier this week that the trade group National Tank Truck Carriers estimates as many as a quarter of all gas tank trucks in the country don't have drivers.
This is the byproducts of the COVID and then some of the political response to the COVID pandemic are causing us massive economic ripples. And we're just really beginning to see some of this stuff now. When we're talking about paying over the road drivers $70,000, $80,000 just to drive over the road and you can't get them to do it, you can't get people to take the job. And this is so you're not having gas be delivered, and so that jacks up the price of. And if the labor's that high, then somebody has to pay the price for that. You know, yep. it's really, really concerning stuff.
Are you familiar with Bodega Bay?
Vaguely.
Or Tippi Hedren?
Yes.
Okay. Calling Tippi Hedren.
I do know Bodega Bay. Yeah, go ahead.
There you go. Huge flock of birds calling a house in California home. It's not in Bodega Bay. It's in Torrance. Family says their home was bombarded by birds, more than 800 before they lost count. Animal control officers told them, just leave the doors open. That didn't help.
Let's all rally at the coffee shop and let's all rally at the coffee shop and make a plan of what to do as a community.
Stay out of that phone booth.
That's right.
Family ended up staying at a hotel until the birds were gone. And boy, I can't imagine cleaning up that mess.
Oh, my God. Bodega Bay is the fictional name of the town in the birds, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We just watched that not that long ago. And you know
what's
funny?
That's one of the most traumatizing movies of my young life.
Oh, yeah.
Life.
No, that's one where there are so many movies I watched. Like, I probably watched that when I was six.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why did you let me see
No.
that? And then I remember because it was the weekend after that, we had gone bike riding and we were up in the North End and on one of the Gulf Power Towers, there was about 20 vultures. Yep. I'm like, You don't know.
Mommy.
All right, Mark, thanks for the update. Defense of having wealthy people. You ready? Nobody does this much. Nobody explains why it's important to have a system that allows people to gain wealth, even massive amounts of wealth. You ready? Because wealthy people squander their money on new technologies and innovation, which is the only way that people who develop new things ever bring them to market, because they know they have a small, in the beginning, market of wealthy people who are going to be willing to spend money on that next new thing when it's in the early, very expensive phases. That leads them to mass production so that eventually all of us have access to it. Innovation across the board is generated by wealthy people with disposable income that can try things before the rest of us can afford them. You say, well, Andrew, I mean, that seems a little bit silly. Does it? America's the wealthiest country in the world, right? Who built the vaccines? Who built the vaccines that are going to save the world from a pandemic? Was it some country in Central America or Africa that built the vaccines? Wealthy America built the vaccines because we have the resources to do it because we're wealthy. It's important to have a system that allows for wealth, because that's where technology and innovation comes from.
I'm Jennifer Kishinka with Your Money Now. Ford says it expects a global semiconductor shortage could ease this summer, but may not be fully resolved until 2022. As the automaker reported a strong first quarter profit, but said the shortage may slash second quarter production by half. Ford said the ongoing chip shortage would cost it about $2.5 billion and about 1.1 million units of lost production this year. The automaker handily beat Wall Street profit estimates for the quarter, earning 81 cents a share compared with a consensus 21 cents, but Ford shares are down more than 2% in pre-market trading. Former Clemson standout quarterback Trevor Lawrence, who's expected to go number one in tonight's NFL draft, has signed an endorsement deal with Adidas. Lawrence also recently signed an endorsement deal with Gatorade and the cryptocurrency investment app Blockfolio. On Wall Street, futures are higher after stocks closed lower yesterday. The Dow Industrials fell 164. That's Your Money Now.
I mean, you have to play this part. You have to play that part. Janice Gilley, she is the Escambia County Administrator, and she joins us every Thursday at about this time. Janice, great to have you back on the show. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. I hope that music gets everybody going.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, it does. Definitely it does. Hey, before we get into some of the other things that are going on, let's just make sure that people are aware. There is a meeting tonight for the Perdido Key Drive. There's a workshop on the design development kind of stuff going on there, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. I know that we've tried hard to make sure that the community out there has been very engaged. And number one, trying to determine what type of intersection we have out there, and then also now on the design. So tonight's an opportunity for them to either come open house style and provide comments in person. They can use comment cards, or they can also go online and also provide comments. So I would encourage folks to participate that live out there, that travel that area frequently, and that's the Perdido Key Drive around Johnson Beach.
You know, it's just kind of this is a total aside from anything else, but it's funny when you're a kid, and even when you're first driving, and even when you're a young adult, let's say up into your 30s, you're so focused on your job, your career, your dating, your fun, all that stuff. It never crosses your mind to think about like stormwater mitigation or road design and development. You know, you just take that stuff for granted. You operate within the environment that you have and whatever. And then, you know, you get to a point where you're like, oh my God, the whole world depends on these decisions. Right. It's just interesting.
Well, and it's also, I think it's great for citizens to participate, you know, in this, because what is it? If you don't participate, it's kind of hard to complain.
Right.
And so I think, you know, participating and being part of this is important.
Absolutely. Where are we at on the fire chief search? Last I heard, we were down to just a couple of candidates. Interim director, Eric Gilmore, had done interviews, and he seemed to be pretty happy about the prospects. Where are we at?
Yeah. So we had four great prospects that came in last week. And as with any job, you know, you start looking at the four, and then you start having conversations about which one might be the best fit. And then you start, you know, doing your best to court that candidate to come to our community. And what we're learning is that communities across the country pay a whole lot more than we pay.
Oh, no.
So that's been an interesting lesson that we've learned. And I mean to the tune of 20,000-30,000 more, you know, for these positions. So, you know, that's part of it, is making ourselves attractive in many ways to recruit the right candidate. So anyway, we had four great candidates, and we're myself and our leadership team here is working really hard to recruit the right candidate to our community.
Do we still have, I mean, are there still four we're trying to hook, or, I mean, where are we at?
What I would say is we are still working really hard to attract the right candidate to our community.
Oh, no. Well, that sounds like a terrible news. That sounds like we got nobody. I mean, tell me that we're not
starting over. No, sir. I'm saying one of the four. Yes, we are working on one of the four. I wasn't going to tell you how many of the four were left.
Okay. All right. That scares me because, you know.
No, don't be scared. I mean, it's. You know, it is very eye-opening, you know, as I've done, you know, as we've mentioned many times, I mean, I've recruited, I think, 19 senior leaders here to the county, and every time it's a, you know, a conversation and a negotiation, and, you know, people, there are other places that around the country mm-hmm. that do pay considerably more, not just in the South, but, you know, than our own community. So, and all four of these candidates were outside of the South.
Okay. All right. Well, I know you're kind of reluctant to say. I'm dying to know if we're down to just one person left. I hope not. Anyway.
No.
Okay. You guys also been doing EMS interviews.
We did hire an EMS chief, and we'll be sending that notice out today. His name is David Torsell, and he's coming from Alachua County, and His credentials are absolutely amazing. He's very, very engaged in paramedic and EMS work. He's been very involved in getting the paramedic unit, I mean, the EMS unit down there certified. He's also available, you know, he's also worked with the SWAT team as a paramedic operator. You know, it's just been amazing to look at his resume, his qualifications, and the expertise and excellence that he'll be bringing to us, and the expectations that he has of developing the department and working with the folks that we have currently. So I'm looking forward to them getting that leadership. You know, we've got great people that work at EMS, and I know they work hard every single day. And so I'm looking forward to him trying to find ways to just, you know, help them just continue to provide those services to us. And we do need more men and women to serve in those roles at EMS as either an EMT or a paramedic. And so as we're looking toward, I believe the week of May 11th is EMS Appreciation Week. We're just looking forward to continuing to support them and provide more opportunities for them.
All right.
He'll start on June 1st.
June 1st. And what was his name again?
David Torsell.
Torsell from Alachua County. Okay. Very good. Well, that's exciting. Uh-huh. So that's a done deal. I will take it. That's definitely good to have senior leadership, you know, senior staff being hired back in. The other thing that I was going to ask you about, and this might be one like I have to wait till after the traffic report, but I will be honest, when it comes to Medicaid stuff, I just have blinders on. Like, I know it's a massively important thing, but every time I try to really understand the implications of various policies surrounding it, I just find it hard to penetrate. Can you help me understand the recent things that have been done in the county with regard to Medicaid and healthcare?
Yeah, so we recently passed an ordinance with the hospital's support that provides an assessment to the hospitals, which they can then use to match funding to draw down from the federal government. And this is a new opportunity for our community. And what it does, though, it will help us offset the uncompensated health care costs that we have. One of the things that we don't do well in the state of Florida is we don't always draw down the federal match opportunities that are available. So they go to New Jersey, or they go to, you know, places like Connecticut. They don't come to Florida. We tend to be a donor state when it comes to the federal government. And, you know, I understand that it sometimes is offensive to rely on tax dollars to some folks. On the other hand, when you have as much uncompensated care as we have in our community, it's important for us to draw down as much money as we can to help with those costs. And so the hospitals are going to willingly take this assessment, and then fortunately, they'll use it to the benefit of our community.
Okay, so I remember this coming up a year or two years ago. It was before COVID, or maybe it was post-COVID, but this was where they basically came in and said, we're going to bring to you the opportunity to help us figure out a way to get these match funds. And I thought it involved actually making some sacrifices on the front end by the hospitals that would come back later. Am I remembering this right, or is that kind of related to this?
I don't know if that's the same issue, but okay. In this particular instance, they actually are, for lack of a better term, taxing themselves.
Yeah, that's it. And yeah, when they tax themselves,
Because
allowing themselves to be taxed, that allows them to be eligible and the county to be eligible to draw in these federal matching funds so that they would actually wind up getting more to take care of the uncompensated care than they are currently getting and kind of help defray the cost of that. That's the idea?
Yes. And I would even say that I believe that our governor and our Agency for Healthcare Administration and others are actually encouraging the communities to do this. To try and draw those funds down.
Very good. Well, hey, you know, if it's going to help the hospitals take care of people, and especially the cost that they're incurring taking care of uninsured people or underinsured people, great. I mean, that sounds, especially, as you say, if it's drawing down federal funds that are there that other people are taking advantage of and we aren't doing a good enough job of taking advantage of, then that's good as well. Janice Gillis, she is the Escambia County Administrator. Janice, always a pleasure. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the work you do. We certainly appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You have a great day.
All right. 6:47 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. 55! National average for a gallon of gas, 288. Florida average, 279. Bridgeport, California is 529. Fort Worth, Texas is 219. If you're in Navarre, 282 east at the Walmart, 279 west at the Walmart, 291 up 87. Midway, 281 at the foot of the Garson Point Bridge, 279 in Milton at the Raceway before you get to Avalon, 277 at Walmart and Pea Ridge, 281 at the second station when you're heading through Pace, that's the Raceway. Once you get over into Pensacola, 267 at the 9 Mile Walmart, 264 at the US 29 Murphy in front of the Walmart, 278 coming in from the southwest side at the Navy Exchange, 279 at the Murphy on Navy Boulevard. 6:52, News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
President Biden marking his 100th day in office by heading to Georgia this afternoon. He'll headline a drive-in rally after meeting with former President Jimmy Carter. The visit kicking off what he calls the Getting America Back on Track tour with stops in 12 states. A 13-hour standoff in North Carolina is over, leaving one deputy dead, another wounded. The two were shot while carrying out a wellness check. One airlifted to the hospital and died. The other taken hostage by the suspected gunman, who officials say later killed himself. Well, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell still pushing his claims that President Trump lost the election because voting machines were rigged. He, of course, is being sued by Dominion for those claims. He was on Jimmy Kimmel last night. Says he's got the evidence, and it'll soon be before the Supreme Court.
I have it. It's real. So people can say, oh, you're an ex-crack addict, so your brain's not right. Well, yeah. You know what? They can say all they want. It's going to come out. I keep putting the evidence out. It's going to come out.
Kimmel telling Lindell he doesn't think there's any validity to his claims, but that it's important the two talk to each other.
I'm a former crack addict and my brain's not right. Is that what he said? Well, that's what people will allege. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 6:53, Davis Allen. Time for a quick shot of sports.
If you don't know that sound, that means that the draft picks are in. Tonight is the first round of the NFL draft.
I thought that was the sound of the chairman of the NFL getting booed. Is that not what that means?
Well, it usually can mean that, too.
But, that's the get ready to boo Roger Goodell sound effect. Isn't that what that is?
Yes. So, yeah, and it is in person, by the way, which means we'll have real boos, not the awkward virtual boos and him looking at his TV like, come on, guys, you can do better than that.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, Roger, no. Well, anyways, it's in Cleveland, which I also think is an awesome place to bring back the NFL draft. So Cleveland, they're going to be rocking tonight. It's going to be happen around 7 o'clock is when the first pick should come in. The Jacksonville Jaguars have the first pick, and it is very much expected they are going to take Trevor Lawrence, quarterback out of Clemson. Again, that's tonight at 7. And also, we're going to be covering it on our sister station, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM and 99.1 FM. That also begins at 7 o'clock. And also, leading up to the draft yesterday, we did have some movement as Carolina Panthers trade their quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater, to the Denver Broncos. The Broncos needing a quarterback. Bridgewater going there. Now that opens up the expectation that the Panthers will likely draft a quarterback with their first overall pick. Trey Lance is who they're thinking will go there. You never know. Anything can happen on draft day. I'm David Sound with your quick shot of sports.
Is Bryce Harper going to be okay?
He is okay. Yeah, so Bryce Harper yesterday took a fastball, about 96-mile-an-hour fastball to the face.
To the face.
To the face.
From the Cardinals pitcher.
He said that he's doing okay.
Wow.
He said he's doing okay.
I just saw the video for the first time myself. I'm like, oh my God, that's terrifying to see.
Yeah, I guess they did CT scans and everything cleared. Bryce Harper said he's doing fine. I mean, maybe he'll sit out a day or two, but I think he'll be back.
That's good news.
He'll be back soon.
If he's talking, you know, that's good news. All right, Davis, back to you for traffic on the fives.
Oh, and I just want to throw this one out there. Just being that I played baseball at Gulf Breeze High School.
You want to throw this one out there?
I want to throw this one out there.
Really?
Just toss it out.
At 97 miles an hour? Hey,
Gulf Breeze High's baseball team won the district title yesterday.
Oh, nice.
So congratulations. Something not even I got to do when I was at Gulf Breeze, and that they won their second title since I graduated. So congratulations to the Gulf Breeze baseball team. Now taking this into your traffic on the fives is going across Garcon Point Bridge. If you're leaving Gulf Breeze, just a little slow moving, but nothing that's too significant. Once you get on, you'll probably expect a little bit of delays, and then you're going to get over the hump. It should check in clear the rest of the way towards I-10 from there. Southbound traffic on Avalon and Garcon flowing smoothly, along with Gulf Breeze Parkway and Navarre Parkway. I-10, I-110 reporting no delays, and the front gate of NAS Pensacola flowing smoothly. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
What's your goal what's your goal when you're trying to sell a home? You want to sell it fast, and you want to sell it for a good price, right? I mean, obviously. So Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke, they sell about 3 homes a week. Okay, 130 homes last year, divide by 52, you do the math. Okay, she was telling me 1 week they had recently that was 3 offers on one house, 3 offers on another house, 30 offers on a third house. Typical week, 3 homes. And the 30 offers one is kind of interesting because the person who was selling that home originally wanted to sell it herself, which people, you know, they think it's a hot market. I can sell it myself, and maybe you can. What price do you get? Well, she was going to put it at $197, and Christina Leavenworth, they got it sold for $237, $40,000 more, 20% more. So she was pretty happy, and this is the point. You know, when she talks about making that guarantee if your home qualifies, because they know they can get them sold quickly for a good price. So if you want to sell your home or you're thinking about it, you just want to kind of know what's possible, give her a call today. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty, they'll help you, 723-9158. News Radio 923 AM 1620. Time for future news. Davis and I tell you what's going to happen before it happens. Is Bryce Harper going to be okay?
He's going to be fine.
He's going to be fine. Very good. Social media companies. Will the Florida law pass? House and Senate come to agreement and the governor sign it? And will it actually change things?
I think yes to both.
It will pass. It will get signed in. It will then be litigated. And the question is ultimately going to be what happens at the Supreme Court, because this is going to be a Supreme Court question. The transgender bills got added back in now at the last minute to a bill on charter schools. Is the transgender sports ban bill going to wind up becoming law in Florida?
It won't.
No, I don't think so either. Biden wants 3 to 18 education. He wants your 3-year-olds all the way up through 2 years of community college to be free education. Is that going to wind up happening?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. We'll be back with Senator Rick Scott in just a few minutes.